We're back with another episode of the Return of the Roar podcast. My name is Brendan Nunes. Got my guy Frankie Cardicelli here as well. Frankie Franklin, what's going on, man? What's popping?
That's a Jack Harlow reference, isn't it?
I guess
it's an it's fine. Things are good, man. It's been a minute. I know we were kind of both battling some illnesses and just kind of general just work life. Our bosses. Is on a little vacation, so we've been kind of having to pick things up a little bit, and we missed a week, but we're back, and the Kings are back. And not that they were gone, but playing some good basketball, man. It's been fun, and we're in the middle of a 6-game homestand right now. We've basically been living at Golden 1 Center, just making some jokes with some of the PR guys last night. They're asking if we wanted to just, you know, might as well sleep in the press room because we're, you know, going to be back there tomorrow. So, pretty good, man. How you been feeling? You been enjoying the homestand? I know that we both enjoy being at the arena more, and I'm sure fans that are listening, a lot of people. I see a lot of familiar faces at games, so people have been frequenting, but are you enjoying this homestand so far?
Yeah, enjoying it. I will say I'm happy that we don't have anything to go to today. You know, it's nice to get a little break in between it, but yeah, man, it's hard to not enjoy it, especially just with how the Kings have been playing recently. They've won 5 of their last 6. And the first 3 of that 6-game homestand, like you said, longest of the year, beat the Thunder. Keegan Murray, practically by himself, beat the Utah Jazz. Well, shout out to Domantas Sabonis in that one as well. And then they just dismantled the Washington Wizards in that third quarter, even if the final tally looks a little bit closer. I feel like we have to start with Keegan Murray.
I think we do, too. I know we were going over our outline, like, I guess if we're going to talk about him a lot, we can put it. No, let's. There's nothing. I mean, this is what we're here to talk about. This is what everyone's talking about. This man is taking, I mean, Kings Twitter for sure by storm, but now some people around the league, which in normal fashion, are tapping into what the Kings are up to. And this man's been incredible, just incredible.
I tried to think of other examples and I can't really. I think that was easily the best game I've ever seen in person or the best, like, individual performance. Like, sadly, I think of the Bagley dunk in Summer League of Dude. Just like that was there was so much hype around that. You know, well, what I mean?
I think like I've seen. So I saw Nikola Jokic is complete. I'm just like, I'm trying to think of like games where you've seen guys completely dominate. Right. And I saw Nikola Jokic drop 50 in that COVID year, but there was no fans in the building and the Kings won. So it was kind of just like a mixture of emotions. And it kind of was like, wow, this guy's really just going for 50. Like this is. Whatever. And then there was the Boogie Cousins game where he scored 56 against the Hornets. And that is the only thing that I can kind of equate the kind of run that Keegan Murray was on. Because every single time that Boogie got the ball against the Hornets, he was just going right to the basket and scoring. This is a little different because it was kind of something that Jason Ross was telling me last night about how the only thing he could equate it to was when he was in Golden State watching Klay drop, was it 37 on the Kings in the third quarter? Mm-hmm.
I guess this other thing would be Steph's 50 ball in game 7.
That was kind of like
the efficiency is so different.
The efficiency was different and the way he was doing it was different. Keegan was just dropping triples, like stepping into threes, contested threes. He was hitting fadeaway jumpers. It was just the man was on a heater. Like in the third quarter alone, since we're just diving right in, third quarter alone, Keegan Murray plays the whole quarter. 26 points, a Sacramento Kings record. 8 of 9 from the field, 7 of 7 from 3. At what point did you think, okay, Keegan's doing something really special? Was it like in the second quarter? Because he only had 19 at the half, I think. Or was it at that point in the third where you were just like, wow, he's really going to maybe go for 50?
In the second, I knew he was cooking a little bit, right? Like, I think I remember tweeting like, oh, you know, Keegan has 13 points. He's playing well right now. And then I had to like, quote tweet. I'm like, oh, 2 minutes later, he's already up to 19. This happening quick. And I gave up on those updates pretty quick. It's probably that end of second, and then it carried over into the third, where it's just like, this guy's on a total heater. 11 straight threes is ridiculous. I don't know about you. I did not recognize in the moment that he made 11 straight. I think at one point we looked at the monitor with the stats on it right in between us. And it was like, he was 11 of 12, right?
Yeah, because I mean, I'm looking right now. In the second quarter, he went 3 for 3 from 3. So 13, he had a great second quarter. And then in the first quarter, I think he went 1 of 2. He went two of three. So he missed, I think his first three of the game, he missed.
He must have. Yeah.
And then he just completely went insane and scored 39 points over two quarters. Absurd. And I think even in this, you're talking about the second quarter, his dad, Kenyon Murray, who I think a lot of people that follow the Kings are familiar with the Murray family now. His dad was on with our guys, Kyle Draper and Whitey Gleason, Drive guys. And he told them that in the second quarter, he kind of was telling his wife, like, oh, like Keegan's mom, this is different. Like, I think he's going to start getting going. Like he was saying that he's seen it happen with Keegan, like in high school and stuff, like when he kind of gets into a run like that, and he hadn't seen it since then. And yeah, when you look at the final result, and I know we'll probably talk about the little jokes between him and some of the guys, but he really had a chance to go for 50 or more. Like he really had a couple shots in the fourth where it was, you know, they're near the rim and whatnot. But I think that Utah really tried to emphasize taking him away from knocking down threes. He did go 0 of 2 from 3 in the fourth quarter, but only got four shots up. But 47 points, that is more than De'Aaron Fox, more than Mike Bibby, more than Peja. So many Kings legends have never scored that many points in a game. And Keegan Murray now stands at, I think, 7th or 8th on the Kings all-time scoring list for points in a game.
I never thought I'd hear that in my life, to be honest. If
Fox isn't even on the top 10 right now. It's insane. It's honestly crazy.
And to add to it, going into that game, Keegan's averaging 13.8 on 41% from the field, 30% from three, had kind of been struggling. I'm sure I'd take it as a combination of he had a larger defensive assignment. Obviously, he's getting placed on some of the best guards or even forwards, really more often than not the best player on the opposing team. Keegan Murray's getting assigned to. He's put more effort into rebounding. And maybe that takes out your legs a little bit offensively. And then also the back injury. I think that obviously that really limits people's movement and affects a guy that's that tall trying to have a consistent form on a jump shot. You could tell he was kind of laboring at times, throughout the course of that. And that 13.8 on 30% from three after these last two games is up to 16 points per game on 36.7% from three. I think you even pulled like specifically his last five games where he's just been totally cooking.
Well, even like the back, you talk about the back issue, and it was like really clear that he was going through something. We'd see him grab at that back sometimes, and even he'd stay in. I know I can't remember which game it was, but he left the game early going into the half. I think it might have been in New Orleans where he left the game at half and then came back and tried to finish. It was the play-in or the in-season tournament game. He tried to come out and finish because he said it was an important game, but he really hasn't really looked the same. Didn't look the same as last year until that point. Over the first 13 games of the season, Keegan shooting 39% from the field, 28 from three, averaging 13 points per game. That's just not Keegan Murray. Now, the past five games, like you mentioned, this doesn't really look like Keegan Murray either. This looks like prime Paul George or something like that. 25.5 points per game, 5.2 rebounds, 2 assists, 1.5 steals. The defense is still there. 58% from the field, 60% from three on 6.6 attempts per game. And the Kings are 4-1 in those games. So, I mean, we're talking about like, I mean, I guess it is kind of, no, that was a Saturday. So that doesn't go into this week, I don't think, for player of the week. But if Keegan were to somehow continue the stretch and he scored 24 plus in three of his last five games, what if it continues and Keegan Murray is Western Conference player of the week? I think it's a long shot, but this is the kind of numbers that would get you there. It's just kind of an interesting days. If that Saturday game was yesterday, we could really be talking about someone who could be up for player of the week if this continues.
That's wild. I had not considered that, but yeah, I mean, totally part of the conversation for sure. Like what does this do for your perspective of his ceiling? Because I personally really struggle, and I've been somebody that's been skeptical about his ceiling since the draft, and obviously my take on that and how good he can be has changed since the draft, but I'm still hesitant, or still was, and am to an extent, hesitant to believe that this guy is going to be an all-star more than maybe one time in his career. Like I often compare it to Tobias Harris' career arc, not saying the same type of player, but the same type of impact throughout the course of the career. Fringe all-star, sneak in 1 year sort of thing because it's a great year that you have. Mark Jones also joined, I think it was Drive Guys yesterday, and said that Paul George comp that you just mentioned as well. And it's like, I kind of see it. That 47-point game, like, I can't help but be like, well, you know, it's one game, but that's not just one good game. That's historic. Like, you had listed the guys that made 12-plus. Everybody on that list, I guess, maybe except for Donyell Marshall, and maybe Donyell Marshall, educated enough.
Good role player, but it was funny seeing the reactions too. And I mean, I guess just being like the basketball, like that early 2000s, like trivia, that's like my era. Like I know too many things about that era, and I'm always on Donyell Marshall's on that list, but so many people on Twitter are like, what the hell is Donyell Marshall doing on this list? I don't really know. But Keegan Murray, I don't look at him as a guy that's just like going to be, like, about his ceiling, I guess, to kind of answer your question, I don't really see Keegan Murray as a fringe rotation player. Donyell Marshall was a fringe rotation player. Maybe sometimes he was a starter, but Keegan Murray is a guy to me. If Tobias Harris is a ceiling, that's fantastic. But looking at even Paul George's numbers through his first couple of years, I mean, Paul George's 21-year-old season, he started all 66 games, 12.1 points, 5.5 rebounds, 2.4 assists, 1.5 steals, 44 from the field and 39 from three. These are very close numbers to what Keegan Murray averaged as a rookie around the same age. So I think that the comps of Paul George and Chris Middleton, obviously Chris Middleton has been incredible and injuries have kind of slowed him down a little bit. He was one of, in my opinion, one of the top five, top 10 wings in the NBA at one point, 2-3 years ago. I don't know if I'm really going to look at that anymore. I think that it's somewhere in between Paul George and Tobias Harris. And I think that it's more leaning towards Tobias Harris for his ceiling, and that's fine. I think that's okay. But to expect him to be a perennial all-star MVP candidate, I don't know if I'm quite there after a five-game sample size. But there's no doubt that the growth has been there. Like he's creating off the dribble. He's attacking the rim. Like I think you, Chris, and I were stunned watching him just completely attack the rim on, I think it was a loose rebound. I don't remember what it was, for a tip and dunk. I can't remember.
I think it was on Koulibaly. I was like, well, I'm glad he did it, but it might be the skinniest guy in the league, but still.
Well, he's targeting. I mean, that's good. You're targeting a defender that you have in a mismatch. Attack him. And last year, Keegan was, I want to say, I don't want to say strictly, but 90% of the time, he's a dribble handoff. Dribble handoff, he's benefiting from those, or spot ups. And this year's hasn't been the case. The ball handling still has to come along, but he's knocking down jumpers, creating on his off the dribble. He's hitting threes while he's being tightly contested. I don't know. I don't have the numbers in front of me as far as contested threes, but especially against Utah, he was just, these weren't all wide open looks. And I think that it's very exciting. And I don't really know if I can say he's going to be a multi-time all-star, but I have changed my opinion that he's going to be I think my ceiling before was like Harrison Barnes at his peak. I think he's going to be a lot better than that. And I don't know what that means, but I think he's going to be a lot better than Harrison Barnes was at his prime.
So do I. And yeah, so the 3-point shooting thing that you talked about, like he kind of was mainly that last year. Coach said the same thing post game. Is, quote, last year he was strictly a 3-point shooter. He's scoring at the second and third levels now. 2, 3, 4 years from now, whoa, you're really going to see something out of this young man. He's just barely scratching the surface. I believe it. I'm on board. And is it wrong of me to take this into trade conversations because he seems to be a hot topic there?
No. And I will say this, because it was a point in my notes that, and I think Alan Stiles, our pal, who is addicted to the trade machine.
He's
really addicted. We go on, by the way, just a little plug. We go on Wednesdays with Chris Watkins, Alan Stiles. I think tomorrow, Wednesday, we're on 12:30 to 1:30. Make sure to come check us out for a Kings Roundtable. But every time we go on with him, he says, got a trade whipped up for you guys. Hope you're ready for this trade. I don't want to repeat history, even though history has worked out well for the Kings, but this is eerily similar to, I think it was the spring or winter of 2021 when the Kings made that trade, 2022, when the Kings made the trade, Sabonis and Haliburton, we all know it, but it is kind of similar how these players are kind of starting to turn heads and they're playing really well and some eye-popping numbers coming out here and there. And I'm personally taking Keegan Murray like completely out of any scenario. Like I know that we've talked about the Paul Georges and whatnot, but I think if the Kings were to include Keegan Murray in a trade, it'd have to be like a, I don't know. I don't even know a name. Like, can you think of it? I don't want to say Anthony Edwards because I think people would laugh and say it's ridiculous, but it'd have to be like in a package for like a young star.
Mikhail Bridges and Jaren Jackson Jr. Like maybe, but I've kind of, and I was very much vocal on Twitter literally the day of Keegan.
You had a list. Yeah, you had a list of names.
I did, and I'm not proud of the list, I will admit.
Do you go back on any of those, or do you feel strongly about any of them still? Would you like to share the list?
Sure.
Let me share the list.
And I deserve to get clowned for this for sure. And for what it's worth.
Hold on. I don't think you deserve to be clowned
some
for
of
I
them.
I think it is a very, like, sure, I'm saying I don't want the Kings to trade Keegan, but I think it's a very fair thing to look at a team like the Kings and say they need one more piece. And it just so happens that a young player is the package, the primary player in that package. Like, I think that is a fair thing to say. But people that follow you and I are big Kings fans.
Of course.
People that are looking from the outside probably see that through a different lens.
Totally. Like, when I've talked to Raptor people that cover the Raptors about like OG or Pascal Siakam, it's like, well, like obviously Keegan would have to be in the deal. And, you know, yeah, so to your point, like I agree. I think from an outside perspective, this looked very differently. And this was me sort of not countering the report, because there was a report earlier in the day from a handful of people. James Hamm, Sam Amick confirmed it a little bit later that the Kings are not going to trade Keegan Murray this season, at very least. Does this sound familiar? You know what I mean? Like,
it's the exact
that was my whole point. Yeah, that like this is literally what happened. And
the night before the Halliburton trade, we both heard from people that were in the know that he's not getting moved. Woke up the next morning, having some breakfast, and Woj bomb. He's gone. So,
right. Like, why would the Kings ever say that they are considering trading him? You know what I mean? But my point is, if you're out there looking for a star and say you're trying to go bring in that third star, and it's really that one in the hand is worth two in the bush, like you take the guarantee, the guy that you already know is a star rather than the hypothetical star of Keegan Murray. And if you're talking about the list I went through, Paul George, Jimmy Butler, Mikhail Bridges, Donovan Mitchell, I put Cade Cunningham in there. People didn't love that. I'm a big Cade guy. Brandon Ingram, Jaren Jackson Jr. I think my point more so is if the Kings even want to get in the conversation of a guy of these sort of guys, and again, I know all these don't sound realistic or available players right now, and I wasn't necessarily just talking this season. It's that the NBA changes really, really fast, and you never know who's going to become available. But if you want to even be entertained by these other teams, the only way you're going to compete with other packages that are being offered is by including Keegan Murray. Like, sure, you can throw all your draft picks in there. Teams are going to offer one good piece that you already exists and then a bunch of draft picks. And the only way the Kings would be able to compete is by putting Keegan Murray in there. But I think the conversation that I've been asking myself since is like, maybe you don't. Do you need the third star, or do you need two more high caliber starters?
Yeah, you know? like Jaren Jackson Jr. And I wish they still had Tyus Jones, because I bet that would be like, I'd be intrigued by that. If Tyus Jones still played for the Grizzlies and it was a package of Jaren Jackson Jr. and Tyus Jones and Keegan and Filler, whether it be Kevin or another player, I'd be intrigued. But that's the question. It's like, if the Kings were to trade Keegan and Kevin, or Keegan and HB for Pascal Siakam, is that enough to push the Kings into NBA Finals contention? Personally, I don't think so. I don't know. I mean, I lean more, I don't think so, than I think, okay, the Kings have their long defensive wing. Pascal Siakam's a free agent at the end of the year. That's also another caveat in all these like hypothetical trade discussions. It's like, OG Anunoby and Pascal Siakam are the two players that Kings fans have talked about most, and ourselves included. I think we've all talked about those two players over the last year plus. But I think that those conversations are now moot because those guys are not under contract next year. Whoever this hypothetical Keegan Murray trade would be for needs to be someone who is controllable first and foremost. I mean, and that's a gamble the Kings already made. They traded away Tyrese Haliburton, who had 7+ years of control. Now we know he's on a max deal with Indiana. And now, luckily, the Kings have Sabonis under contract, depending how you look at it, luckily, how that contract will pan out. But right now, it's luckily. The man had a triple-double last night. He's playing incredible. That's a gamble I'm not willing to take again as you know, if I'm hypothetically the Kings. You have a player in Keegan Murray who's 22 years old. He is going to be under contract for as long as you want. And seems like a guy who really enjoys the Sacramento scene. His family really is bought in. Again, very similar to Tyrese Haliburton and his family and his scenario. They both come from Iowa. They're both very low-key guys. At least Ty was when he was here. Now he's a star. But I think that the Kings really have another opportunity to, not that they made a wrong decision before, but now they have it. It's like almost a do-over in a different way. Is Keegan Murray going to be a star at the level of Tyrese Haliburton? I don't think so. But he's the guy that, and the kind of player we've talked about for a long time. He's a 6'7", 6'8", wing that can play defense at a high level. He's been the best defender on the team, arguably, this season.
Yeah.
He's been one of the best. Yeah, easily. One of the best shooters in the NBA since he came in the league. Broke the rookie record. And now he's doing things in a game, in a single game, that we've only seen players like Chris Webber, DeMarcus Cousins, and De'Aaron Fox do. That's honestly not coincidence, in my opinion. I think that this is the kind of player that you are looking for. This is what you need. Now it just kind of comes down to, is the defense real? It has been only 25 games, but I think the results are there. He's defending the best player on the floor every night. And if the back holds up and he finishes this year strong, I think the Kings really have something. And I'm one that would like to see that through, but you never know if there is a guy that becomes available this summer, even like we don't know. That's the thing you talked about, I think, last week, that players become available every year. This crop of this season just so happens to be the Raptors guys. Those are the big names. And Zach LaVine, who the Kings, for some reason, are still keeping tabs on. That would be upsetting. If they were to trade Keegan Murray in a deal for Zach LaVine, that would be upsetting, which I don't think they would ever do.
No, and I think that, and we can get into, I'm down to get in LaVine in half a sec, in half a sec.
Ayo.
The Keegan stuff, I've never meant to come off as like, I think they should trade Keegan.
You hate him.
Just that there is a world where it makes sense, but it makes sense if you think that you're getting a guy that is catapulting you into championship contention. But you also don't have to hurry. Your team's locked up except for Malik Monk. Like,
who probably will stay. I think, like I know that there's no reports or we have no sort. I think that you don't think so.
I just don't know if the Kings can pay him enough. Like, I think that it's early bird rights they have, and I don't know the exact number off the top of my head. I think it's somewhere close to 17. We'll say, to keep it a little bit of a range in case I'm a little off here, like 17 to 20 million a year.
I think that should be enough to keep him for a guy who's making like a little more than 9 or barely 10 million a year. I don't know.
I could see a world where somebody else decides to cash him out, though. You know what I mean? Like, he's balling.
I know he's balling, but think about it.
Probably enough.
I mean, I'm being optimistic on this. I understand. Because again, like, talk about people that are viewing this through a non-Kings lens are probably like, what? Like, money talks. I get that. But the familiarity with De'Aaron Fox, how much it seems like he's bought into the Sacramento, you know, I think last night, I couldn't tell what was he was wearing some kind of Sacramento centric jacket last night. Wasn't he with like a bunch of, is it like local Sacramento? I couldn't tell, but a lot of people were blowing it up on social media saying how much he loves Sac. My eyes are horrible and I couldn't really look that well at it at the time. I was just like, what the hell is going on? But I think if you look at a guy that's going to be making almost double his salary and going to get a lengthy deal, he should stay. But sorry, I didn't mean to get you off topic.
No, you're totally fine. I think that obviously he should stay. And I think that there's a good chance, but I do just have slight concern. But you have your whole team locked up. Like, give it time to see what Keegan does show more of. Like, obviously, this was a big flash, and you hope it picks up from here. He talked about how much that did for his confidence on how good he can be offensively in this league. And keep proving it. You know, like, you have time to see still before you even consider this. And if you think that you can go at a guy without giving up Keegan, then maybe that's the way to go, you know? And that's exactly where this Zach LaVine conversation, I think, kind of comes in. Sam Amick wrote a piece sort of talking about Zach LaVine, and an interesting Rich Paul kind of countered the often heard take that any clutch client is trying to get to the Lakers. I believe it's 26 of the 30 teams in the league have clutch clients. And De'Aaron Fox is a star. And it's not the first time that I've heard that, you know, there's some clutch clients that I think would like to spread their wings compared to what they're able to do in their current situation. And I think Sacramento could be looked at as a spot where, like OG Anunoby, for example, obviously the conversation with the Raptors is different, but just talk from OG's perspective, and not to speak for him, but I think this could be a train of thought that maybe he wants to be able to do a little bit more than what he's been able to in Toronto. And you go to Sacramento and say you're the final piece to a team that really is like all of a sudden flirting with Western Conference Finals contention, and you get to, again, spread your wings, that's appealing to people. Like, I think point being is that De'Aaron has clutch pull, I think, not close to LeBron James, but like, I don't think he's that far down the list. You know what I mean? And
no, it's his team.
Sacramento's like an appealing place now.
Yeah, no, I completely agree. I think it depends on what you're looking for. I think not everyone wants the LA Miami lifestyle. Like, not everyone wants that. And I think for a lot of people, once they play here, and I think it really has happened a lot of times, like where people play here, maybe not all the time, but they live in Sacramento and they go, okay, this is fine. And like, also very important part of being a professional athlete, where you play isn't where you live in 12 months of the year. Like, not many people stay in unless you are in maybe one of those bigger cities and you enjoy it. But even from like a Yankee standpoint, like, I'm a Yankee guy, I know, sorry, everybody, but not many of the Yankees actually stay in New York and live there in the offseason. They go home, they go off to wherever they live or where they want to live, and then they come back for spring training or whatever. De'Aaron Fox is a guy that has proven you can come into a situation, fall in love with it, and then they want to stay here. They had a house built. They're hoping they can stay here. Obviously, we know that they want the Kings and Fox want to come to an agreement on a max contract if he can make the All-NBA team. I think if this continues, that's certainly going to happen. And I think that is huge for the Kings bringing in talent and attracting talent. This goes back to when the Kings were good in the early 2000s. They were bringing in, you know, not star free agents, but they had stars on the team already, and they were bringing in guys that were kind of glue guys and people that you would want to round out a roster. That's what the Kings have needed and what they have gotten. They brought Malik Monk here because, again, De'Aaron Fox, because they're friends, and a guy who is, you know, not a star on De'Aaron Fox's level, but Malik Monk for reserves is top three bench player in the league right now this year. Arguably, maybe even been the best bench player in the league. Definitely a guy who should.
Before Keegan went crazy, it was like unanimous Malik was the third best player.
Yeah, I think we talked about it. I think we were at a game and like, who's been the Kings' third best player? It's Malik Monk. And there still is an argument for that right now. I mean, yep. Keegan's played great, but there's still an argument that through 25 games, Malik Monk's been a top three player. That's what I'm saying. I don't think it's the end all be all. If the Kings don't make a big trade this year, like you said, they have guys, they have structure. The Kings, for most of my life after 2006, have not had structure. They have a solid foundation right now as far as coaching staff. Arguably the deepest coaching staff in the league, which might look different next year, but from a coaching standpoint, training staff down the line, they are very solid right now, and they have a lot of things that you can hang your hat on. If you can't go out and trade OG Anunoby or Pascal Siakam, it does not mean your season is over. The Kings, if they were to try to improve internally, I'm even a little optimistic that they can maybe make a decent run. I don't think they're winning the NBA Finals, but they can grow with this group that they have and try to see what the offseason looks like. But there's no need for people that are running to the trade machine every 5 minutes, in my opinion, to pull the trigger on a deal this February. It doesn't have to happen. If it happens, cool, and hopefully it's a smart move. But Keegan Murray should be out of those discussions, and the Kings can still bring in a guy, a clutch client or whoever, because Sacramento is a good team. And I think once people live here, they can realize it's not a horrible place to live.
I agree. I'm going to read some of this Amick piece, if that's right. It's an interesting portion here about the Kings. If they go for players like Toronto Raptors, Pascal Siakam, OG Anunoby, who have drawn interest from the Kings in the past and who are headed for free agency this summer, then the massive cost of retaining them in the offseason would have a significant impact on what the Kings were willing to offer to acquire them in the first place. Translation, no Keegan Murray. Siakam aspiring deal. Those two particular prospects appear unlikely at the moment, but we still have a long way to go for the market to evolve. Anunoby, more specifically, does not appear to be of significant interest to the Kings. To me, that means price considered, because clearly they've liked him. Mm-hmm. Like that, the Kings like OG Anunoby. But like that's not a secret, right? Like it's price considered, and also I think it's important to keep in mind, like this is all a game at this time of year, right? Like why would the Kings say, yeah, we're in love with OG Anunoby? Like you screw your leverage.
Yeah, you'd be desperate.
Right. Do you have anything on that before the next part goes to Levine?
No, I mean, also from the OG and Anunoby standpoint, like while we're not Siakam, I guess they're different players, but the Kings, I mean, if Keegan Murray is this guy, kind of redundant to go out and give up a bunch of assets for OG and Anunoby, who it doesn't hurt to have another wing, but if you're swapping Keegan for OG, I don't know if the margins are that significant as far as how much you improve right. as a team. I think OG Anunoby is a great defender, a better defender than Keegan Murray for sure. But Keegan's showing upside, and I think he's a better offensive player at this point, or will be a better offensive player. So, yeah, I think if the Kings' offense has waned a little bit, doesn't surprise me.
I think they're a dream match together, but swapping the two is definitely fairly lateral, you know. Worse given contract situations and age, obviously, and team control. But Amick goes on to say, conversely, the choice to go for a player like Levine, two-time All-Star, has a combined $178 million left on his deal, including a player option worth $48.9 in 26-27, would come with a decreased willingness to put an exorbitant amount on the table because, well, his contract is quite hefty. That is I take that as, and there's a last line in here that I think is a whole different conversation we're going to get to in a sec, but Levine itself is, I think that's saying, like, again, no Keegan, but can we pay less than what you'd normally pay for a star, given that this guy's making a ridiculous amount of money and probably not playing like a top 10 player in the league with that sort of salary. So, you know, Kevin Huerter, Harrison Barnes, Davion Mitchell is matching salary. If you put, I think it was like when I was trying to figure it out, it was Zach LaVine. And I think it's like Terry Taylor that I threw in there as well on Chicago's side. And not enough. What are you talking? 3-4 picks? Like, is that get you in the conversation?
You can't get Torrey Craig in that deal. Your favorite.
I really wanted to, but I don't. I was just thinking from Chicago's perspective, that's probably tough. I was trying to look for a throw in more than a guy that like actually is playing. I would love me some Torrey Craig, though.
I feel like this is what are your overall just feelings on this? Like, would you think the Kings should try? Do you think the Kings should try to get someone like Zach LaVine? That's my first question. Not like, do you like it or just do you think the Kings should they look into getting Zach LaVine?
I mean, I think they should talk about it if the price is okay. Been thinking about it a lot since this dropped yesterday. Like Fox, LaVine, Murray, Sabonis. That's a crazy full. And say you keep Malik Monk. That's an insane starting five. But like, what's your defense?
I mean, there is a salary cap too, though. Like,
right.
You got Fox making 37. Okay, I'm going back. I'm going over to 25, 26 because I think LaVine's still under contract. You're what, 26, 27?
26, 27, he has a player option, yeah.
Okay, so how much is he making in 25, 26?
Let me pull that up real quick.
Because I'll start. De'Aaron Fox will be making, in the last year of his contract, before his extension, I'm sure, because he's going to sign an extension, $37 million, Fox. DeMontis Sabonis will be making $45 million that year.
Which year?
2025, 26.
Zach LaVine will be making just under 46.
Okay, so we're talking about 130 million, I think, which is the Kings' entire salary cap or salary for the whole team right now. It's 140 million.
And those say we're adding Malik Monk's 17 annual if he signs that.
Yeah, but then you offload probably Kevin Huerter and probably Harrison Barnes, obviously, in the trade. Trey Lyles, you probably can't retain him. You have Sasha under contract one more year for $6.5 million. There's other money off the books like JaVale, Duarte, Davion will be gone regardless, I would imagine. Alec, I mean, there are ways you can do it. It just would be like how we see other teams with three max contracts, like the Suns. They have three max contracts and they bring in a couple of guys on league minimum. I'm sure there'd be some guys that would want to do that if you have De'Aaron Fox, Domantas Sabonis, Keegan Murray, and Zach LaVine as your starting five.
As long as you prove that that's good enough. You know what I mean?
If it's not good enough, very, very bad.
You're screwed. Yeah, you're in an extremely tough spot. And that goes to the last line here. And this is what really confused me. Still, it's worth highlighting that the Kings' current focus appears to be on the value of additional shooting and offense above all else.
They want
and
more
Sam
shooting.
Goes on to say they've improved from to 15th in defense. That's down to 17th after giving up 131 to the Wizards, even if a decent bit of that was the 40 garbage that they scored in the fourth quarter. And that I just what? Like
now that's a kid.
What?
You can never have enough shooting, I guess.
Everything Mike Brown says.
I'm looking at the roster, though, and even like, I mean, the Kings as a team, I get the updated numbers here. As a team this year, 3-point shooting, they are ranked 16th 3-point percentage. That's fine. Third in makes, third in attempts. They have been one of the best 3-point shooting teams since last year, too. But they still are not a great defensive team. So that's my question is why do the Kings need more shooting when you have De'Aaron Fox doing what he's doing from three? You have Kevin Huerter, you have Malik Monk, Keegan Murray, Trey Lyles, Sasha Vezenkov, Chris Duarte, who's not even playing right now. Harrison Barnes, who's, I guess, been a good 3-point shooter this year, shooting 39% on low volume. But do you really need more shooting? I don't know. I don't know. I don't think offense is really something the Kings need right now. Do you? Offense in
no,
general.
But like it never hurts, I guess. But like it's not like LaVine is also a solid defender. You know, like I do have a lot of faith, I will say, in Mike Brown getting the best defensive output out any player is like capable of giving. Like he'll get the best defensive version of Zach LaVine. I don't know if that's a good defender, though. You know what I mean? And they're aiming for a championship. That doesn't mean this year, but obviously that's the long-term goal. You have to be able to lock up, right? Like, not lock up, I guess, is a little dramatic, but 15th is, I guess, fine with where they've been at, and we've been saying if you're a top five offense and just a 10 to
upper half
15 defense, yeah, like I guess
they were 25th last year. We gotta remember they were 25th in defensive rating last year, and they still
but
were.
Do they feel that much better this year? Like,
I think that they feel a little better. I think that it hasn't seemed like the Kings have been helpless as much, which I guess is not saying a lot, but I think that De'Aaron Fox, who has been playing, I think, strong defense as well as his offense has been great. Domantas Sabonis has not been a Jaren Jackson Jr. by any means, but I think that he's even taken a step forward. Keegan Murray, we've talked about, he's obviously doing a lot. And granted, this is all about the Kings, who we thought was their best defender. Davion Mitchell is now completely out of the rotation, which, again, that gives some props to Keon Ellis for doing what he's been doing. But, I mean, I'm just not really sure where the LaVine scenario works. And especially for a guy who will be 29 years old in March and is on his former years for 40 plus million left. And he's not an MVP candidate. He's not a perennial all-star. I mean, he's made two all-star appearances, but those, I think the last one was going to be 2+ seasons ago. It's just a guy I think that would fit a team. Like, it seems like a Lakers move. Like, LeBron's trying to get another ring before he goes. They're gonna be kind of wilding out and doing some crazy stuff. Go get Zach LaVine and make a push for the finals, Lakers. Go for it. But I just don't know if the Kings, if they're gonna bring in a $40+ million contract, that is not the one that I think is an ideal fit. All things considered,
he's a perfect offensive fit for what it's worth. Like LaVine's playmaking is tough, but he doesn't have to be the playmaker. He can finish plays, which he's elite at. You know, like De'Aaron and Domas setting him up is going to do wonders for Zach LaVine. And he's better than Keegan offensively. And look at how Keegan's able to just like finish plays for these guys. You know, I do think offensively it's pretty perfect. It's just defensively, like, do they really think that what they have right now is enough? And I don't know, because I agree with you. I think Fox has been phenomenal defensively this year. I think Keegan has been legitimately amazing and the team's best defender. And I think Domas has been better this year. He's had good moments of verticality, but obviously he's not going to have the size that will typically give you he doesn't have the size of Jokic, right? This was a knock of Jokic that he's not a good defender. He got better, but I don't know that Domas can ever be Jokic just because of that size when it comes to the defense. This one really, really caught me off guard.
It's just a little confusing is all. It's a little confusing. And the timing of it. I mean, I know Monty McNair is again, executive of the year. He's always looking. He says a lot. He's always, you know, checking under rocks and checking behind every door. But is it due diligence? Maybe. We'll see if this continues and it grows again. I think this new Kings front office, though, has been very airtight with leaks. And, like, the Sabonis trade came out of nowhere. Like, there was nothing. Like, Kings are working on. No, just trade's done. It's over. So, I feel like whatever the Kings do, because, again, that was the last big trade that Monty McNair has made. I think the last deal he made was Kessler Edwards, I think. Mm-hmm. I think it's just due diligence at this point. And if LaVine comes to the Kings, yeah, I'll talk myself into it. Hey, he will be a great offensive fit. I just worry more about the long-term ramifications of it and the lack of defense, which the Kings, we know their offense has been great, but they need more defensive impact. And I just feel like if you're going to bring in a big contract, I'd wait another year and see who's available in the offseason or, you know, or whatnot. But if that's a move that Monty McNair in the front office thinks that they need to make to push this team to finals contention, you know, Monty's been hitting green more than red lately. So I think that I'll have to buy in.
I agree. I think that they deserve some blind faith a little bit at this point. But you just better be sure, because you're spending 3-4 picks on LaVine. It doesn't work out. What is your pivot from there? Like, Keegan's the intriguing piece from there. And it's like, obviously you don't want to be forced into having that conversation. And last thing in this piece as well is that Amick does mention per league sources, LaVine would be very amenable to a Sacramento move that would make him Fox's backcourt mate. And
which
I don't
was
think
reported it's coincidence before too.
That, yeah. And I don't think it's a coincidence that Fox's name is mentioned in there rather than just saying he's willing to go to Sacramento.
That's the same exact report that came out in summer when I think it was Sam and Shams reporting that Bradley Beal was open to going to the Kings. And again, another name mentioned in that piece was because De'Aaron Fox. Like, De'Aaron Fox is the marquee name that, you know, every non-point guard, even point guards too, maybe, but every non-point guard is going to want to play with him. Like, he's that good. So I think there's going to be a lot more reports like that over the next couple of years, because again, Fox, I think he turns 26 today, tomorrow.
Tomorrow.
26 years old, man. Aren't you a 26-year-old yourself?
I am.
Yeah. Kids. Guess what, kids. a lot of youth, man. A lot of youth.
Okay, and Franklin.
I know. I'm looking at Zach LaVine. I'm like, this guy's 29 in March? Like, I'm not 29 years old, but what a grandpa, dude. Yeah. Again, the Kings also have that ace in the hole, too, as far as they do have their draft picks. Like, they could do something really drastic in the next year or two, or maybe even sooner. I don't want to say the Paul, I bring it up a lot, but I don't think anyone will ever do that again, the Paul George Clippers deal. But I could see if there was a big star available and they really need to give up 3-4 picks, like a not MVP type caliber, but above Zach LaVine's tier, I think Monte McNair would do something like that if he needed to really maximize the potential of his group.
Things change very, very fast. Like, you know, it's not long ago that Giannis is talking about, like, well, like,
if it doesn't work out.
If it doesn't work out, or Joel Embiid says something like that, or, you know, nobody thought that the Brooklyn Nets would blow it up as quick as they did after getting that trio. Like, say a Kevin Durant, a Kawhi Leonard somehow becomes available. Like, I know these are all pie in the sky, but like, things change really, really, really fast in the NBA. And you never know. I think one thing for sure is that the Kings are active, and Monty McNair, Wes Wilcox, front office is very active in searching for better ways to improve this team. But we've also seen him be patient while being aggressive. And I very much expect that to continue from this point. So
tight-knit group, man. It's a tight-knit group. This team, like, you see it in all the post-game photos, and I think Mike has said it before too, how connected this whole group is, and other players have said it too. These guys are, I mean, I know every sports team, everyone likes to say it's a family. These guys are like, they've been close for over a year plus now, and they've been together every day and gone through a lot. So it's going to take a lot, I think, for them to break it up. And if they keep winning and playing good basketball like they are right now, I don't see it happening anytime soon.
I agree. Should we do just like some little quick stuff on?
Yeah. Well, why, like, we, I guess a transition. What'd you have? Do you have an idea?
I mean, I just feel like the two all-stars on Sacramento's roster deserve some love because they're playing out of their minds.
I agree.
Like, De'Aaron Fox, 30 points per game, 47% from the field. It's this 38.2% from three on 8.3 a game. He's ridiculously confident. In that game against Dallas, when I saw Derek Jones Jr. going over a screen, I was like, I don't think I've ever seen that in my life when it comes to guarding De'Aaron Fox. If defenders go under, he's shooting it instantly. And I swear every miss, damn near every miss, is short or long. He's very rarely missing left or right. They're all extremely close. His shot is cash right now.
It looks good.
And that's always what we've said of, like, that's how he becomes a superstar. And sure enough, he's averaging 30.
That was it. That was the one kind of downside to his game. De'Aaron Fox, great player, quick, can get to the basket. Can't shoot, though. Since draft night, that was the biggest knock on him. And I think people have gotten quieter with it. It's early in the season talk. We're 25 games in now. I mean, we're over a quarter of the way in. And he's, I think, as far as volume, he's a top 10 shooter in the NBA right now, which is pretty insane. I think he's 38% on, what, six or seven? No, eight attempts per game? It's 8.3. A lot of attempts. It's a lot of attempts, man.
I'm pretty sure last I checked, he's leading the team in attempts. He still is.
And I think that was more than double last year. What was it last year? Do you have his attempts up?
Five last year.
I mean, that's...
He started getting them up last year.
Significant bump, though. And in the playoffs, we saw it too. We saw in the playoffs the first time that he could be that kind of guy. And I think Steve Kerr even said he was playing a game of numbers with the Kings in the playoffs and let Fox shoot, but took out Kevin Herter and Keegan Murray. Well, Fox shot pretty well from three that series, at least at the beginning. But I think that De'Aaron Fox is solidifying himself as a, like we talked about before, and I think you got into it with a couple of our guys on the air about it, superstar. This is what superstars do, though. These kinds of numbers are these are superstar numbers. There's really not any way around it. And especially with the winning, that's all it goes hand in hand with it too, is can you win? Like, can you have these numbers and win? And it's happening now. So definitely some props for De'Aaron, and for someone that De'Aaron was kind of saying last night that fans don't appreciate him enough. I mean, De'Aaron and Rasay were making, you know, singing praises about Domantas Sabonis. And I do think among all the other chatter on social media, the memes, mostly it's Warriors fans, I guess, but Domantas Sabonis has just been
or Kings reporters. As
well, you know, just but like, as good or better or King or one Kings reporter or former Kings reporter. Love him though. I do love him though. But he's been better than last year almost. I mean, I'm looking at this year, 19 points per game, just about 12 and a half rebounds, 7.2 assists, 58% from the field, 40 from three on low volume. But we're doing five game sample sizes because the Kings have been playing so well over the past five. 18 and a half points, 13.7 rebounds, 7.3 assists, a steal, 60% from the field. Four triple doubles? Is that right? Yeah.
Three in the last if you go the last eight games, I think there's five.
Yeah. I mean, and eight straight double doubles. Like he's second in the NBA in double doubles now. And the way that Fox was kind of putting it after the game last night was it's just very consistent. Like he just does it every night. And it's almost like you just look at the score box in the early fourth quarter. Oh, Sabonis has 18, 12, and 8. Like, it doesn't even seem like he's doing it. It's just so within the flow of the game. And it's not as flashy as De'Aaron Fox or even like what Keegan Murray has been doing. It's just behind the scenes work almost while the other guys are doing some heavier lifting. But I don't think anyone does the heaviest lifting of all, which is Sabonis down in the post getting just beat every game. And that also can't be taken lightly because he gets hit hard every game, hits the floor every game, and yet he's back out there. And we all know how tough he is with the broken hand and whatnot, which it's funny with the Wizards game last night. I went back and watched some of the highlights from his first game back after he broke his hand. And I think we'll talk about that years from now and be like, do you remember when Domantas Sabonis played and was an all-NBA center with one hand? Because he's proving right now he's even better when he has two hands.
He is. I think we might be a little crazy with these triple-double numbers. The defensive rebounds and total rebounds at least confused me.
I got confused. No, that's why I read wrong. Yeah, he has three triple-doubles. I think he has two over the last, like, eight games?
Yes. Yeah, because there's the one in New Orleans, or against New Orleans. That must be the in-season tournament game. And then most recently against Washington. And even you look at that Utah game, man. Like, Keegan gets the highlight. Domas has 20 points on 9 of 10 from the field, 10 rebounds, 8 assists, 2 steals in there as well. 6 turnovers isn't great. But like Kevin Herter said postgame, Utah, by the way, is just insane for just running that zone as long as they did. Like, there's no way that Keegan Murray should be getting like halfway decent looks when he's on fire the way that he was. But Domantas Sabonis, Kevin Herter shared postgame that Domas is saying, like, get me the ball in the middle of the court. And it's going to shrink their zone, and then he'll just make plays from there. He just casually does everything. And I think it is easy to overlook and become desensitized to, almost in a way, when you're watching it on a nightly basis. But he deserves his flowers just like De'Aaron Fox does. And they both enable each other.
I agree. And like I think Hoops Hype has like their their metrics of rating, like who should be all-stars. And Fox and Sabonis, right now Fox is one like player below being a starter in the All-Star game as far as how well he's played this year. And Sabonis is in the middle of the pack as a reserve. And I don't know if he'll make the All-Star team this year. I mean, maybe, maybe not. I think the Kings were kind of getting some flowers last year, but there's no doubt he deserves it. He deserves to be in. I think he's been one of the best players in the league this year. He deserves to be an All-Star. Fox, for sure. There should be discussion about him starting the game, but we'll see if, you know, fan vote is everything. Fan vote is everything. Which I really don't like the fan vote, man. I really don't. I don't know.
It's like when Wiggins was an all-star starter. It's like that Wiggins was amazing that year, but a starter? I can't believe it. Like,
did he actually start the game?
He started.
I'm going to pull up his
he was a starter. I remember it being so ridiculous. And my dad's a huge Warriors fan. And he just like constantly flexed that year. I'm like, Pops, he's not actually a starter caliber.
No.
When it comes Wiggins to the all-star game.
And he's really been having a year this year, like really having a year.
He got moved to the bench and had a good game, which take that for what you will, I guess.
So he's a reserve now.
For now, I guess.
I do think at some point the Kings and Harrison Barnes, I mean, not to get down this loophole, like rabbit hole as we're wrapping up, but I do think at some point, it's a discussion. Like, he's been playing better lately. So I guess it's not really the right time for that, but. There was a thought, I think I was talking to Chris Watkins about how if you have a bench unit of Keon Ellis, or if you get another guard at some point, and then you have Malik Monk, Trey Lyles, Harrison Barnes, and then you have Sasha in a pinch, it's not bad bench depth, but then you got to start one of those guys, obviously. And I don't know if you want to start Trey Lyles. So,
yeah.
HB's been playing well. Two straight games of 16 plus. I don't know what much more you can ask for from Harrison Barnes, but, anything else you want to like? Any big? Wait, hold on. Yeah, he did. He started the All-Star game in 2022. Wow, I honestly can't. I can't believe that. Wild. I really so can't. Wild. I cannot believe that.
My last thing will be like, I think it was justified for us to spend the episode talking about Keegan and some of these trade conversations and how those overlap. But big picture, the Kings are 16-9, man. I think that has them at, I could be getting this number slightly wrong, but it's above a 50 win pace, I guess is what I'll say. And they're sitting at fourth in the West. They beat every team above them. They beat Minnesota. They beat OKC and they beat Denver. And they're four games out of the one seed in the West. Again, sitting at fourth, you'd have home court advantage in the first round right now. They're playing really good basketball, 7-3 in their last 10, and they're rolling right now. This Boston matchup is a big one, though, I think. That's tomorrow at the day of recording here, Tuesday. And they get smacked by Boston every year, man. And you look at like the New Orleans and the Clippers and how having two versatile self-creator wings has given the Kings troubles. This might be the best wing duo they've faced all year. So it's a pretty big test for them in my mind.
The whole week, really. I mean, Boston, we know they'll be on a back-to-back. Doesn't really matter. Kings have played teams. I mean, the Clippers completely wax them.
I think the only thing that'll mean is no Al Horford.
Yeah, or Porzingis is questionable tonight. I think he's going through a calf or hamstring thing. So he might pick one of the games. He might choose to play tomorrow against Sacramento rather than Golden State tonight. That would not surprise me. I think that from where Golden State is right now and how shorthanded they are, I think Boston might look at, okay, let's have KP for Sacramento tomorrow. And I feel like I want that. Like, I want the Kings to play these teams at full health and at, you know, Kings full healthy too. But the schedule ahead, I mean, the Kings right now currently have the 12th hardest strength of schedule. That's dropped because they've been taking care of some of these games. They were, I think, in the top 10 and the
remaining schedule.
Yeah, they're 12th. They were 9th or 8th last week. But this week, they'll drop even further because they had the next three games. You got Boston. You have Phoenix with no Bradley Beal, but still a tough game. Because Kevin Durant did not play last in the Kings with the Suns, and he seems like he'll be playing on Friday. And then the one I'm really looking at as a, I don't want to say scheduled loss, because my family is all going to this game, and my brother, who is going to be home and hasn't been to a game all year, Minnesota on Saturday, on the second night of a back-to-back, against a rested Minnesota team. Could be.
That's after Phoenix, right?
Could be brutal, yeah.
Yeah.
Could be brutal, but I think it's a good test. I think that if the Kings get through this week, if they can get two of the next three, man, there will be some conversations to be had. I mean, and especially if Boston is one of those two or whatnot, but it also is kind of funny that the Timberwolves have been the best team in the league up there at the Celtics, and they still have one home loss, and it's to the Kings. So that's pretty funny.
Very wild. And Boston, all of their losses, they're 14-0 at home, but they're 6-5 on the road.
The Kings never won in Boston. Like, I don't remember
the time they get the Kings destroyed. I was just looking. I hopped on with one of my Celtics buddies yesterday, and now, like, I mean, there was that game. It was like 120-70 something.
Oh my god!
The Reese played.
Where the score graphics like a meme now? Like, it's like, yes. It's a 60-point game.
And then I think even last year was like close to 30 that they got beat by the Kings. That is, so they usually really struggle against Boston. But
no, it's a house of horrors for them. Some quick notes before I forget them. I got them here. Over the last six games, this is after the Kings lost to New Orleans. They're leading the NBA in assists per game. They are fourth in winning percentage. They have won, you know, obviously, five of six. Three-point percentage, they're third. Points, they are also fourth. So playing some good basketball over the past 2 weeks, I guess. That it is kind of a bummer, though, that we didn't get to go to Vegas and that New Orleans got completely just destroyed, and Kings Lakers would have been a lot better, I think. But
I agree.
Yeah, you know.
I agree.
Pelicans are a problem. We'll have to talk about that another day, but that's also a problem. Yeah. Anything else, man? Anything on your mind?
Not really. I guess it's funny to me that Keon Ellis is just the backup point guard now, and last night, I think it's worth noting, and I probably should ask about this post game and just slipped my mind, that JaVale didn't play, that they went with Trey Lyles at that backup five. Yeah, and that could be matchup dependent because Utah's rolling out, or not Utah,
Washington.
Washington is rolling out Mike Muscala as their backup five. So that could be just sort of matching what your opponent's sort of lineup is. But I don't know. That's I just think that's something a little worth noting, I mean, I guess.
If Al Horford were to play tomorrow, which I don't know if he will, right? I mean, he's not playing back-to-back.
My Celtics buddy was thinking that KP would play in the second game in the Sacramento game, and that Horford would play in the Golden State game.
So they're switched. They don't both play on back-to-backs, though. They switch.
Well, Porzingis just kind of has an injury right now, but Horford does not play back-to-backs.
Okay, well, hypothetically, if Horford were to play, like, I think the Kings probably go Trey again. But I'm not sure who slides in as the backup big when Horford is out. I could probably find it, but
you wanna guess? Luke Kornet is also injured, so where does that leave him?
Don't even say it. Are you serious? Is.
It has been.
Nemeas Kata.
I really think Nemi's going to play.
If Nemi dominates the Kings, man.
No, bro. No way. No way.
By the way, Boston, holy hell. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9. They won 8 of 9. They could win 9 of 10 going into tomorrow's game.
Their lineup's straight up ridiculous. Like, Derek White is one of the best defenders in the league. He's actually having a borderline all-star season. Jrue Holiday, everybody knows what he does. Jaylen Brown's playing the best basketball of his career. Jason Tatum's a top five, at very worst, top 10 player in the league. And Kristaps Porzingis is just a perfect fit. Like, their team is ridiculous.
It's a move that he needed, for sure. And also, the Celtics are 2-1 in back-to-backs on 0 days rest. So,
good to know.
Gonna be the biggest test of the Kings have had this year, I think. I mean, Minnesota on the road was tough, but you didn't really know what the Timberwolves were fully. I think, yeah, it was early in the season. They weren't, you know, looking like the juggernaut that they are now. Boston has been a juggernaut from the minute they traded for Jrue Holiday, in my opinion. And it's gonna be a tough test. Jrue Holiday versus De'Aaron Fox is always interesting. I think Fox has made a point in getting stronger, because early in his career, Jrue Holiday would just take him in the post every time, post him up every time. And I think last year was the first time Fox kind of like was able to battle back a little bit. So, still, man, big week at Golden 1 Center. We've still got three more to go.
Three big ones. Three very big ones.
Three big ones. And then even when they have like a short road trip, and they keep playing at home again after that, don't they?
I think so.
I don't think they go on like a road trip. I mean, look, for a minute, they go to Portland on the 26th, which I think we're having a show that day. I think you and I are going to host that day. We'll have to plug that, push it a little bit.
Yeah, 9 to noon, right?
9 to noon. We'll call it maybe Return of the Roar. Holiday special. I don't know. Ideas in the comments. But the Kings do have three more games at home. They go on a short three-game road trip just for 5 days, Portland, Atlanta, and Memphis. Then they have another four-game homestand. So we're gonna be at Golden 1 Center a lot through that first week of January. And then they go on the road for about 9 days. So home cooking, baby. We're doing some home cooking.
Cookies and glizzies.
Cookies and glizzies. And Brendan puts mango only on his. So
sure. Yeah. Not sure. It's true. It's true.
It is true. You don't hide from the people.
It is true. Whatever. You know, it is what it is. Anything else before we get out of here, Frank?
Nope. Catch us tomorrow, Wednesday, or today when we're listening to this, Wednesday from 12:30 to 1:30. That's the plan with Styles and Watkins. We'll be on with them. And then, yeah, December 26th, it should be 9 a.m. We're going to plug it more on our social channels and the station and whatnot. But Brendan and I are planning on hosting a show from 9 to noon that day before the Kings face Portland. So probably do a bunch of fun stuff. Just kind of honestly just hang out, take YouTube questions, whatever. We'll just kind of hang out. So
totally. Yeah. Stay on the lookout for those. That roundtable Wednesday is every week, by the way. And I very much enjoy those segments. So definitely be sure to tune into those guys.
Not the Trey Machine segment as much, but
yeah, well, you know, depends. We should come with our own.
We should. Let's cook up something just ridiculous tonight.
And super spicy.
Let's turn the tables on him tomorrow. I'm like, no, we got something for you, Alan. We got something for you.
De'Aaron Fox for Steph Curry.
For Jordan Poole. No.
For Jordan Poole.
Yeah, every time that Jordan Poole hit a three last night, he was like, pool party.
Yeah.
He didn't hit a lot. I think he hit 8 threes, though. Poole was kind of going off.
kind of came out of nowhere, I feel like, but yeah.
Real quick before we go, he finished with Jordan Poole went 8-13 from 3 for 28. Yeah, got to give him some props. But
no Keegan Murray, but it's nice.
No Keegan Murray, but hearing Allen yell Poole party every time Poole had a 3. We'll cook up a trade for him.
I'm down. But yeah, definitely check out all the great shows that run from 6 to 6 at Sacktown Sports 1140. And Frankie, myself, Emil, is writing on SacktownSports.com. And that's all we got for this episode of the Return of the Roark podcast. So appreciate everybody for listening or watching, whether on YouTube or audio platforms. And a like subscription is always appreciated. That's all we got today. So you'll hear from us again in the next handful of days here.